On February 9th, 2004, a single car accident occurred on Route 112 in Haverhill, New Hampshire, just outside of the White Mountains.
The driver of the car was said to be 21-year-old Maura Murray.
To this day, there has not been a credible sighting of Maura.
Her family, friends, and a growing community of citizen detectives are desperately searching for closure.
If you have any information on the whereabouts of Maura Murray, please contact the New Hampshire State Police Cold Case Unit.
You are listening to the Missing Maura Murray podcast.
Welcome back to the Missing Maura Murray podcast. I am Tim here from the Crawlspace Studios in Wormtown. How's it going, Lance?
Fantastic. How are you today?
I'm doing well. We have this amazing interview to introduce here today.
This is the story of the A-frame house told by the owners of the A-frame house during the 12-year anniversary of Maura's disappearance.
Right. Mike and Sarah, they came here to our studio to have an in-person discussion with us. And we do have full video of this conversation on YouTube. So check out our YouTube page at youtube.com/missingmauramurray and you'll see the full video. Now, Mike and Sarah, their occupations come up in the interview. So I just wanted to mention it now because it is important to mention how grounded they are as people. I mean, at least from how we know them, they seem like very grounded people.
Right. We bring that up as we talk to them as well. These are they've been together since high school. They have three children. And these are not people who want any spotlight, but they are people who are aware of and sensitive to the where the case is at. And they know that they have something important to talk about concerning the A-frame house and what's been found in it.
Right. And so they came here to tell the story. And Mike is a law enforcement corrections officer and Sarah is a nurse.
I think all of us have this idea of the A-frame house and an idea of a house that they had been in. Because I think most people have been in an old home. Most people have felt some sort of energy out of an old home or just an old place. And we were there, and we have said many times that, you know, if it wasn't more than something bad, you just felt it when you walked in the house. Something bad happened in that house. You just kind of feel it in your bones. But to have Mike and Sarah actually tell us about it and look us in the eye and say, this was done, and this was done, and this was weird. And we don't normally think these things are weird, but when you put these things together, in addition to what else has happened in, you know, in that area, it does make for a it gets spooky.
It's a spooky story.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's play the interview, and just wanted to say happy holidays to you out there. This will be our last episode of the year. And if you're doing some traveling over the break, check out our other podcast, Crawl Space. We are here today joined by Mike and Sarah. They are the old owners of the A-frame house. So Mike and Sarah, let's start from the beginning here. What happened? Like, when did you buy this house?
September 12th, 2014. That's the day we closed.
Well, thank you for being here and taking time out of your days to tell us stories of the A-frame. The A-frame house is one of those, like, touchstone folktale elements of the Maura Murray case. So I think people are going to be super interested to hear what you folks experienced in the house. How did you find the A-frame house? A little background on why, because anyone who's seen pictures of it, like when I saw a picture of it, my first instinct wasn't, that's my dream home. Yeah.
That was my idea.
That was Sarah's idea, absolutely. Actually, we were originally looking for a piece of property, and through Zillow, she happened to find this house and said, let's take a look at it. And I was like, oh, God, this is nothing but work. But I was a carpenter for many years, so I figured, you know, we'll take a look at it. And we drove by. said, we got to have that house. It was like just something beckoning, you know, like calling us to it.
So you guys moved in. How did that go?
Well, I took a week's vacation, which turns out to be like 10 days off when you add your regular days off to it. I was up there alone for 10 days fixing up the house, making it livable because
it was definitely not livable.
Yeah. And it had sat empty for 10 years prior to us.
That was going to be my question. This house sat empty for 10 years. Mm-hmm. This was in a sense your second like a vacation home, right?
Correct.
Well, we had been going to New Hampshire for 20 years for vacations. So
great. Skiing and hiking.
Hiking, yeah.
So we were looking for something that we could afford to use during the year.
Because the price range of it is perfect for a vacation home, someplace that you can just have a long weekend at, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So what was it about the house? Because you said it's been vacant for 10 years and you had a lot of work to do and you took time off to exclusively work on this. What was it about this house that beckoned you? I mean, walking in and seeing that it needed a bunch of work, were you like, I'm up for the task here?
Pretty much. Well, initially it was the price, and then it was the size. The community was great. You know, there's tennis courts right across the street.
The fireplace was really
beautiful. The fireplace
was
beautiful. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Two lakes that you were like a part owner of, so you could go kayaking and paddleboarding and fishing.
Playing tennis and sledding and stuff like that.
Never really played tennis before, and you could just walk across the street and play tennis. So it was pretty neat.
Right. It was the Mountain Lakes Lodge across the street?
Yes. Correct.
Gotcha. Yeah.
And it was a larger piece of property than most of the neighborhood. It was like an acre and a quarter. So it was a little bit more than other properties we were looking at.
Okay.
Well, that sounds lovely.
I know.
It sounds like a lovely vacation home. You can get into some hobbies, exercise across the street. So, but when did it start getting weird?
When did it go Amityville?
I would say that was the second weekend of January 2015. We had brought up another couple with us to
see what we've done and to see our house and vacation.
And they were going to meet with the real estate agent that sold us the house to look at property for themselves.
To possibly buy in Mountain Lakes or the area.
So this other couple was like, this is great. You guys scored. I want to see if I can score on this. And you said,
sure.
I'm going to hook you up with the guy who
sold us this
house, and we're going to be vacationing second home buddies up here.
Exactly. And the real estate agent showed up at 9 o'clock in the morning to meet us, and he wanted to see what we did to the house. And one of the first things he said was, well, obviously he said, place looks great compared to what it was. Mm-hmm. Still wasn't near perfect, but it was livable and cozy.
Clean.
And he said, by the way, I want to tell you, you might hear some rumors, and I would like you to hear it from me.
Instead of someone else. He said, the neighbors may talk to you, but let me tell you before they do.
And sorry to interrupt, was this taking place inside the house or outside the house?
Inside the house.
Was he awkward about it at first? Did it look like, in retrospect, he had this on his mind the whole time? And
he's hard to read.
Yeah, he's definitely hard
he's
to read.
He's hard to read.
So you're in the house, you're upstairs.
We're downstairs by the base of the fireplace.
Okay.
Correct. And then he goes, you might hear it's rumored that a girl that went missing might have been killed in your house.
He specifically said might have been killed in your house.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What was
I started crying right away. I started crying.
Did he apologize?
I don't think he
didn't want to make you cry.
No, but I don't think that he believes the story. So I don't think that he feels particularly like he owes us anything or that he did anything wrong, because he doesn't believe perhaps that that's what happened.
And he didn't do anything wrong, because unless it's proven fact, you don't have to disclose it.
And we understand that, you know, but it was still upsetting because we had put the rest of our money into fixing the house up. And
so
then,
the reason for you crying was, tell me about that.
Well, I was crying because I thought, holy cow, you know, I cannot believe that that could be possible. And it made me very upset to think that that was.
Especially because we loved the place so much.
And then I went, that's what the blue ribbons all, when we researched it, it all kind of made sense, you know.
What we did was we wound up going kind of sucked it up and went and looked at properties with them for the couple
for the
hours.
Day with our friends. We went, okay, we're going to go forward and continue.
But the back of our minds all day, we're like, holy crap, we got to find out what's going on here. So
did you tell your friends?
They were there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, they were
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
When
yeah.
That
well, they weren't. I don't think they were downstairs
no.
with us.
Well, once he left, we talked about it. So he was like, our friend was like, all right, you know what? We have to find out. And I'm like, absolutely. So what? There's no cell service there. And we didn't have.
We didn't pay to have it.
We
in
didn't have
house.
Anything. We didn't have a phone in the house. We didn't have anything. So we were going to go hiking anyway. So we went to Lincoln. And we wound up sitting in a parking lot where we got cell service, and well, we Googled. We didn't even know her name at the
no,
time.
No, we didn't. We just Googled. See, he had actually Googled our home before we bought it, but nothing came up on it.
Because you didn't Google creepy A-frame house.
We didn't.
No, actually, you know what it was is I just looked at the first page. You know, when you Google something, there's page one, page two. Well, on page two, if I had clicked page two, it would have came up Maura Murray.
Oh, wow.
So we didn't know her name, but we sat in the parking lot for a couple hours and we were looking everything up, and it was just so unbelievable, and it was so flooding because there were so many things that.
Right. So on the Wikipedia, you see right away, it says, you know, that there was a search done of the A-frame house, and I'm like, wow, that's our house.
Yeah.
And then it talks about the cadaver dogs coming into the house and hitting in the house on two occasions. There was a couple sets of dogs, I believe, that they brought in. So I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. The cadaver dogs hit in the house. So they don't really make mistakes. I mean, one could. Two, most likely not. Three, definitely not. I think there might have even been four dogs. I don't know.
We don't know.
And both of you were in the parking lot in the car looking at the at your phones, the history of the A-frame house.
There was four smartphones, like,
all
cranking.
All yeah. of you were there.
Four yeah. smart people and four smartphones.
Correct.
And what was, did you get this panic? Were
yes,
you,
I wanted yes. to sell the house right away.
And how long, what was the time frame that you'd owned the house at this point?
Well, this was 4 months.
4 months.
4 months, okay. Uh-huh. And you wanted, did you say that in the car?
Probably.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
I was so upset
she,
because
the whole weekend she just spent.
I was very upset.
Very upset.
What's becoming a legendary part of the whole story mm. is the old owners of the A-frame house purchased some luminol and the closet.
That was my idea.
The closet lit up. And this has only been a source from Tim and I and written. No one's ever heard this actual story from, you know, the old owners of the A-frame house.
Yeah. So let's back it up just a little bit. So the dogs search, the cadaver dogs, they went bonkers is the quote during these searches in the downstairs closet. And
correct.
So your idea was to buy some luminol.
Well, what really made me start thinking was the house is built on a concrete slab and the whole downstairs was carpeted except for two locations. The front entryway, which I figured somebody just ripped that up because it gets trashed from
the water,
water and snow and mud and stuff like that. So I was like, all right. And the downstairs closet underneath the stairs. There was no carpet in there. And I was actually, I remember calling Sarah when I was working on it. When I took a break to get materials at Lowe's, I think in Littleton, I because there's cell service there, I called her and I said, well, you know, I ripped up all the carpet today. My cousin was up there helping me for a couple of days. And it was a real pain in the butt. But I was very thankful there wasn't any carpet in the downstairs closet.
And I was like,
because
oh, great.
It's small and, you know, you had to like physically use a scraper, like a big giant razor blade on a pole to get the stuff up because it's glued on. Mm. And I was happy not to be on my hands and knees and smacking my head on the stairs and stuff. So now thinking back and find out about the house and the cadaver dogs, I'm like, holy crap. It says that they took carpet samples. Well,
they
there's
did.
There's no carpet in that closet. That has to be it. So I know they searched the house with the cadaver dogs. They hit. They said they took carpet samples. The carpet is missing. Okay. There's something to this. So, we got back. I actually, more research, I contacted Helena Murray. And offered if the family wanted to do any anything with the house. Any searches.
Just come in.
Anything, whatever. Do what you want. Call whoever you want. She got back to me, said, thank you very much. She'll pass on the information to Fred. And I had never heard anything else. I also contacted John Healy, who is part of the, I guess it was the League of Investigators.
Yep.
And he assured me nothing bad happened there. He wasn't there that day of the original search. I remember him telling me he was sick or something. But that they did take this carpet samples, and he said it was, there was nothing to it or something to that effect.
There was nothing on the carpet that they gave to law enforcement. Did he know that, or he was just guessing because he never heard anything further about it?
I'm not sure, to be honest with you. But he assured me that everything was okay and enjoy your vacation home. But there's just, you have cadaver dogs hitting in your house. Regardless of anything, they hit on dead people. Not an animal, not a squirrel, not a deer, not a person. So there was obviously a dead person in that house somewhere.
At some point.
At some point.
I think that's the first that I've heard, unless I missed it, that John Healy wasn't there during the actual collection of the carpet sample.
That's what he told me. That there was somebody else there that the second in charge of or something to that effect.
Did you get any sense from John Healy or from Helena that this was like more important or less important? What was there any sense of
less important?
Well, Helena, I was just corresponding with email. John, I actually spoke to on the phone. Very nice gentleman. And he just seemed very dismissive, like, yeah, it's nothing there. Don't worry about it.
That was in, like, when we came back from our trip in January?
Yes, right away.
Right.
Yeah, but, you know, still, I was like, you know what? There's still something up with this. Because I'm thinking analytically, like, all right, if something's up with, all right, they found underwear on French Pond Road. They tested it, came back, there's nothing there. They announced that. Well, they go into the house. They have things tested. They don't announce the
results.
So that makes you think, all right, you know what? There's something up with this.
Or the knife.
Yeah, or the knife.
Right.
But still, no results.
Right, no results.
Just you telling me the story makes me feel like there's something missing. And I can't even imagine you guys in the house and thinking, but cadaver dogs. Cadaver dogs means
really
dead body.
Exactly.
And I don't know, just having someone like be dismissive about it or tell me, don't worry about it, enjoy your home. It's like, I can't enjoy my cadaver dogs in the closet. I can't enjoy this anymore.
It's over.
Exactly.
Yeah, sorry.
So at what point did you try the luminol?
We went back in February.
It was in February. It was like the end of January you ordered it, I believe.
Yeah.
From a forensics website.
And what does luminol do, just for those who don't know?
Well, and I believe Art talked about it. It's the very first test you would use. And it illuminates, if there's blood, it will glow in the dark.
Body fluids.
But other substances will react with, it will react with other substances. Bleach, possibly, you know, paints, things like that. Other chemicals. But when you take the fact that you spray the luminol, you turn out the lights and the thing's glowing like crazy. It's not like in the movies where you shine black light and then the stuff
like
glows.
In a hotel room, you know,
no,
when
you
see
spray
stuff.
Yeah.
This is like a specific area picked out for a specific reason.
I sprayed the luminol and it was nighttime. We waited till it was dark. It's pretty dark downstairs anyway. And then the closet is pretty dark, but I sprayed it. He turned out the light, so it was pitch black down there. And we looked, and holy crap, the closet was glowing. A lot on the walls, but mostly on the floor and in the bottom right corner of the floor.
It was
absolute pooling of blood.
Or
something.
Of the luminol.
Or
glowing
something.
Of the luminol.
The glowing of the luminol is what I mean.
Right.
So when you're taking into account that the cadaver dogs hit in that closet, they took samples. It's using deductive reasoning. It's human blood,
right? Because one of the not criticisms, but one of the counters to that is, well, it could have been anything. People have said
absolutely.
To us,
Of course it could be anything.
You know, I've been at parties before mm-hmm. in my life, and this is not me talking. This is some, you know, mm-hmm. people that have communicated this to us. You know, you got young kids there, you're drunk, or someone, one of your friends is drunk, and I've seen this, I've experienced, you know, someone urinating in a corner or vomiting. Mm-hmm. And, but I think we have to say again, the reason the luminol was even brought into play was because
cadaver dogs.
We don't walk around luminoling houses. I mean, that's not what we do.
Not something you generally do.
Not yet, anyway.
I never bought more than one container of luminol. Just one.
Did you ever think you'd ever, like, say that sentence?
No.
Ever?
Absolutely
I've only
not.
Bought one
no,
container.
Only one for that purpose. We didn't do anything else in the house. We didn't spray anything else in the house. We didn't. That was the only spot that we.
That's the only spot
that
I checked.
We looked at.
And why was it because of the carpet? But you also told us previously that there was another interesting element of this, mm-hmm. the closet under the stairs.
Yes, very bizarre. The closet was caulked from the inside.
There were stairs above the closet, and there was lines where you could maybe see light through.
Yeah,
steps.
All the joints.
Everything was caulked.
Every
super caulked.
Absolutely. Every single joint in that closet.
And the house
caulked.
Was
joint
not airtight.
Where the wood meets.
So the devil's advocate in me is going to say, well, maybe these people just caulked the house because they wanted to prevent any drafts from coming
through. That's what I kept saying.
Originally, that's what I had thought when I first saw it. And then now, once we found out the story, we're like, that's really bizarre.
Mm. Well, it was cold downstairs, and I was thinking that the cold would come up through the cracks in the stairs to the second story. So that's what I thought.
But cold air settles and hot air rises, so the cold air would definitely not be going upstairs.
But the house was not really airtight in any aspect for the windows. I mean, there was drafty. The whole house was drafty. I mean, there was just...
So was there any other signs of heavy caulking in any other part of the house?
No, some of the couple of the windows, but
like the seams of the windows around, right? And one was
a couple.
Closed.
A couple were actually physically caulked
closed. Because they just didn't work. It was very old. They were broken or whatever. But there wasn't a lot of caulk.
None of the other closets were caulked.
Then this brings us up to February of 2016. Mm-hmm. Are we at? 15. We're still at 15. Okay.
Right, because we bought the house in 2014. And then we were told in January 15, and then we looked at February 15.
That's when we luminol.
Yes.
Okay. And we met you guys about a year later.
A year after that.
Yeah.
At the 12-year, what would that be considered, a remembrance ceremony?
Yeah. Vigil. Yeah.
Vigil.
Yep. Right across the street at the Mountain Lakes Lodge. Mm-hmm. So we met you guys, and you invited us over, and so we went in, and you gave a sample of the downstairs closet, this panel.
That was the second time. John came over one. John Smith came over one other time after you guys were there. I think it was the next...
March, when we were closed.
No, it was February.
Was it?
Yeah,
okay.
I think it was like the next week. It was like a week before we wound up closing on the house.
Mm-hmm. So you put the house up for sale mm-hmm. at what point?
It was almost a year after we bought
it. A year. We were actually going to move up there, and the house needed more work than we wanted to put into it to make it suitable year-round living. And we figured we'll get it on the market. Thought it would take a long time to sell. We got an offer.
It sold very quickly.
Very quickly.
Quicker than we wanted it to be.
Yes,
but
even though it was creepy and the story, I didn't want to sell it. I wanted to keep it, especially if there was a clue or...
We would open the house to people to come in.
I'd let anybody, come on in. Do what you got to do.
Right.
Okay. No warrants needed. Do what you need to do. Mm-hmm. Take anything.
Right. And so that slab or that little piece of the paneling, the wall paneling of the downstairs closet that you gave to John Smith in February of 2016 is what he gave mm-hmm. to the Oxygen documentary.
Correct.
To Maggie and Art, who gave to their doctor, and it tested positive for not one but two people's blood, mm-hmm. two persons' human blood.
That's correct.
A Lance, what is the best Blue Apron recipe that you have cooked recently?
Recent recipe, I would have to go with the chili butter steaks. Have you had the chili butter steak yet?
No, I have not.
This is chili butter steaks with lemon, parmesan, broccoli, and potatoes. Now, this is a whole new take on the classic steak and potato dinner.
It sounds delicious.
What about you?
The baked tilapia and creamy kale with fregola sarda pasta. You know what I'm saying?
Get the fregola out of here.
Nah, it's really ridiculous. Blue Apron delivers fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes right to your door that can be cooked in under 45 minutes. The menu changes every week based on what's in season and is designed by Blue Apron's in-house culinary team.
Blue Apron has a team of professional chefs that help put together the dinners. They put a lot of care into creating the new recipes each week. And these recipes can be part of your happy dinner experience with your family, right? I mean, you probably get together with your family and start cooking. It's
some of the best parts of my day happen over dinner. So we want you to share that perspective too. Blue Apron is treating Missing Maura Murray listeners to their first dinner, a $30 value if you visit blueapron.com/missing.
So check out this week's menu and get your $30 off with free shipping at blueapron.com/missing. That's Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Okay, so now we're up to February 9th, 2016. Tell us about that day.
We actually went for a hike up the old ski resort. Right before, and then just came down off the mountain and walked in. I mean, we still had our cramped
tampons. That's right, yeah.
Our backpacks and stuff.
I remember that, yeah.
And I saw John because I recognized him from the internet and introduced myself and said, I probably had this like ghostly look on. I was like,
we were petrified.
Yeah, absolutely. So I asked him if we could speak with him in private.
How'd that conversation go?
He was very interested.
Was happy that he was interested because I kind of felt like there was not much interest and I thought there should be. So I was very happy that someone listened to us for the first time.
Yeah, because what you'd said previously is that it was sort of dismissive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It was, yeah. And so, you know, we talked to John and told him that we luminoled and that there was blood. And I said,
possibly blood.
Possibly blood. But I mean, come on, people. Cadaver dogs. I'm just, yeah. Let's use logic.
Yeah, it's a creepy situation without a doubt. And knowing that it's human blood and the cadaver dog connection, it's really pretty hard to deny that something really messed up.
By no means am I saying it was Maura. I'm just, it was somebody.
Right. Yeah. That's been something that we keep saying is no matter what it was somebody. And
I find that to be a disturbing that that's not, you know, a big issue that something happened.
Right.
Well, does anyone care?
Right. Does anyone bother to follow up on it?
Yeah.
And we always say that the police need a reason to, you know, get a search warrant, search properties. At what point do you not, like, I have a hard time arguing for the police in this case. If cadaver dogs were in a house and they went bonkers and then an area underneath the stairs in a cocked up closet lit up with luminol, I don't know. I'm not law enforcement, but it seems like that's a pretty good, like,
when you
I
add
like,
all the pieces together. Yeah,
I feel like the chief of police could go to a judge and plead that case pretty well.
Unless that carpet didn't really have anything on it, and that's one piece that could be pulled out of the whole conversation, was if it was a different carpet, because when we bought the house and cleaned the yard up, there was a lot of debris around the property and there was carpets like rolled up disintegrating in the dirt.
Probably still to this day. So there, I mean,
you know, when you
slab, that's not
someone doesn't
there.
Dispose of their garbage properly and you find it like scattered through the yard, like baby toys and pacifiers and pieces of carpet and, you know, part of a backpack, and there was all kinds of debris everywhere all over the yard. So I can't say for sure that that carpet was that they took was the carpet. I don't know. I don't know.
And actually, we had heard some chatter of it not being the carpet that was there. The one that the New Hampshire League of Investors got was not the one that might have been there originally. So I'm not sure.
So that's what I'm saying. That could be pulled out of the equation. Yes, the dog still hit, but if they didn't have any DNA evidence on that carpet, which is possible, then I'm not really sure. You know, I just still feel like someone should care that all those things kind of happened.
And it takes me back to what you said about the house not being in a good condition and it had been empty for 10 years. Mm. This house had been empty, and then they even get new owners who are like, come in.
Well, we never contacted the police.
No, but the police did know about the A-frame house.
They did know about
it. If it's empty, do you even need a search warrant?
Someone owned it.
Yeah. So you'd need permission. Yeah. And I just want everybody out there to know the reason why I never contacted the police was because they were contacted about the house already. So nothing ever came of it. So I assumed they're not interested.
Right. So we figured the family may be interested. And that's where
John came in.
Yeah. Right. Yep. Yeah. Yep. That seems like a pretty logical series of events. And you're talking to John Healy, part of the League of Investigators,
Who is in contact with the police.
Right. Yep. So the day that you invite everybody into your home on the anniversary, it was John, myself, Tim,
our camera guy, and KF.
KF.
And Cammy and her husband as well.
Cammy and Len. Yep. You both seemed incredibly welcoming for these strangers to walk in.
Well, we think that there's a story to be told. And again, if someone's willing to listen and try to help or figure it out, I think it's worth opening your house, you know.
Absolutely. I mean, we have children ourselves, and I just couldn't imagine what Fred is going through. And anything I told in the email to the family, anything I can do to help bring closure, I would have done anything.
And the clock was ticking to some degree because the house was going to go forward for sale.
Right.
And we were in that moment where I think it was like, here we all are. We better do everything right now because we didn't know when the closing day was coming.
I even looked at the legality of getting out of breaking contract, and it's just not possible.
Yeah, I remember that conversation when we were together that day. I remember, you know, the confliction that you guys had with, you know, the house is up, but it'd be, you know, you even said it back then. It'd be nice to still own it. If there was any evidence, like, please come, you know.
Absolutely. And there's still, I guarantee you, if they went in there today, even with renovations, they could take the house is built on a concrete slab. Concrete is a porous substance. Most of what glue on the floor with the luminol was on the floor. So you can just easily break up a piece of the concrete. I mean, it doesn't have to be a big piece. I'm sure underneath the 2x4s on the framing. I mean, even though they did renovations, that closet is still there because there's nothing else you can do with that space.
And the concrete's still there because
obviously that's what the house is built on.
So you guys mentioned you have kids. Do you mind sharing any stories that you told us about how they were spooked out?
I'll defer that to Sarah.
Oh, definitely the house is spooky at night. I personally thought it was a little scary at night.
Very much so.
I'd make Mike come down the stairs with me to use the bathroom in the middle of the night. I wouldn't go by myself. And that's not really typical of me in my own home or any place I've ever stayed. But I was scared. And our youngest, when we first bought the house, she was very uneasy. She said she didn't like it. She didn't feel good. And she said, someone's been killed here. Someone died here. And I said, I think you're imagining this. She was probably 11, maybe, at the time. And we knew nothing about the house. And I kept saying to her, stop, you're fine. You know, you're making this. Don't make this up. It's creepy because it's dirty or it's old or, you know.
This was back in September. Before we even found out about Maura.
So she was just, the youngest one was very uneasy. The other two, I think, were, I don't really recall.
Now
you know,
pretty much indifferent.
Not or, really, like, but she was not happy. And since this has all come out, we get a day. You know, we get a day, not a daily dose, but frequent reminders of how she was right. You know, she's 14 now, so you know, she had some other experiences that were not usual for her. She's not a kind of kid that really makes stories up or is into supernatural things. She's not. But
what did she say about the house?
She said that she heard someone calling her name in the house, and that it was a female voice. And I said to her, "Don't answer the voice because I don't know what you're talking about." And I got worried that maybe something was like wrong with her,
some mental illness.
Not that we have it in the family, but most families do. But you know, I mean, not that we're aware of anyway. But
insanity doesn't run in a family;
it runs in humanity. So I know. So,
when would she hear the voice?
When she was in the house in the back, the girl slept downstairs. When you walked into the house, there was a couple rooms, and in the back corner there was a bedroom with two bunks, and the closet abutted the closet that we've been talking about during this discussion. There's like another closet, and she started hearing her name being called.
From there?
In the room. While she was sitting in the back room.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
And that's when I said to her, don't talk to this. I don't know what's going on. You know, I was very, I'm a mom and she's my third one, but I've never had to deal with that before. I can deal with other things, but I was kind of not sure what to say. So I just, you know, did what most parents did, was I ignored it. And, you know, I said, don't worry about it. You know, it's fine. And it continued.
She was pretty persistent.
Someone was calling her name.
Yeah.
So
and the other, no, your other kids.
They, no one, we didn't know anything yet.
Okay.
We didn't know.
And they didn't experience anything.
They didn't experience anything.
No.
So your youngest slept in the bunk?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And there was another, I assume,
with
one
our
of,
oldest.
Our oldest daughter.
Also.
Downstairs.
They stayed together in that room.
Was the youngest on the top or the bottom of the bunk?
I don't remember. I think they both had their own bunk.
Oh, okay.
There was a couple bunk beds.
Gotcha. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we got a deal on bunk beds and like loaded
we had like
up
eight
because
of them.
We had people coming up all the time.
Right.
So it was extra.
It was just very, I don't want to paint this to be like, I don't have a psychic daughter, and I don't think that she's like extremely special in any way, like really. But I thought that that was very strange that she was saying that, because to this day she's still very much like, I told you something happened there, and she's pretty persistent on that. Hasn't heard the voice since, because I told her to please ask it to leave her alone and not to talk to it anymore.
Hmm. You said that she was persistent back then too. And this
she is.
Yeah.
This has been this has been not anything that's changed. She.
Any other details she mentioned or whatever you're comfortable with?
Go ahead.
Okay. She says that, she feels that.
Recently, she has been having dreams or.
Yeah.
Premonitions or something.
Where, I mean, we do talk about this in the house, so it could be something that she's also thinking about. But she still does believe that something happened to Maura in our house, and she...
Or a young woman that looks like
her.
A young woman.
She sees someone that's standing there.
In the house. She has mm-hmm. dreams or...
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she has also said that she believes whoever it is on the property.
I know. It's so weird. I'm sorry. I almost don't want to say it all because I think it just kind of negates like we're a scientific method. Like I'm very scientific, and we did the process that we followed has been based on the dogs being there.
Logic.
Not like some calling the
not
spirits,
hunches.
You know. Like
premonitions. And
I do believe in like certain, like, you know, psychics and things like that, but that's not what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I just, because it makes me feel like it may negate what we're
talking about
here.
And that wasn't why I wanted to bring it
up.
I just think it's
interesting.
It is really interesting, yeah.
She's very...
You guys are grounded people, obviously.
It was just a very strange, and I think it was towards... the last month or so
yes.
was when she said that She actually texted me. She was in her bedroom, and she's like, I can't get this out of my mind. This is what I'm seeing.
This recently?
Mm-hmm.
Very recently.
And
last, like, 3 weeks.
Last 3 weeks. Okay.
So she's watched the show, obviously, too, right?
She
actually didn't know.
No.
She watched maybe, like, 15 minutes of it, and only the part that had to do, I think it was the fifth episode, and the part that was our house in the fifth one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the part, because she just couldn't get over that this was, you know, we watched that, but only the last 15 minutes of that. As far as I know, she hasn't watched any else of it.
When she first heard the voices or the voice, did she immediately tell you, or was had she said, I've been hearing this for a little while?
I think it was a little while.
I think she didn't tell us right away.
She didn't.
I don't think she knew what was happening. I don't think she understood what, like, I think.
We had come home after a weekend up there, and when she first started hearing it.
And she told us in our house.
She told us.
In our home.
Our main home.
That she heard someone calling her name, and it was a female voice. That's what she said.
Do you know how long after that was? Like, how many times you guys had all been there?
It was the very first time.
Oh, okay. Okay. Gotcha.
We came home, and she said that, and that's when I told her just to leave it alone and not to ask anything or talk back.
You just said it was the very first time.
That we went as a family.
That we went as a whole family.
We had made trips clean. You know, he had cleaned, he had stayed, and he needed a lot of work. And I think we may have went up without them
once before we brought the kids. We did one weekend, and then we brought the kids up.
So the very first time that your daughter spends
a weekend in the house, yes.
She hears a voice.
She did not tell us in the New Hampshire house.
Yeah, not during the weekend.
She didn't, like, come crying out of her bed or, like, any kind of drama.
Right.
She just kind of was, like, not really sure, I don't think, what was going on.
But when she did tell you, she told you that it happened the very first time she was there.
At night, she was heard her name being called in that room, in the back room.
When she brought it up the first time, and even to this day, is it something that scares her, or is it something that's more curious for her?
I think it did scare her at first.
Yeah.
Now, after finding out, I think she's put it together. Like, hey, you know what?
She's right. She feels she's validated. She feels fine about it. She's not a scared kid. She's a tough kid.
Yeah.
She's a third one, and she is tough
as nails.
She will give you a run for your money, but.
And she's validated.
She is.
Quite literally.
Well, she goes, I told you so all day. Absolutely. I told you something happened here. The minute we bought the house, she said, something happened here. And I was like, no, it's just creepy.
It's creepy because it sat empty for 10 years.
And it's dirty, and the windows are broken, and it's been vandalized. That's why it's creepy, not because something happened here. And I kept saying it. And then we didn't tell them even about this.
Until after
we sold the house, because...
You didn't even when she was saying that I hear somebody.
Oh, we were going like we didn't tell her.
And that was not a question in your mind. Like, you're not going to tell.
No.
Yeah, you don't want to
perpetuate
that.
Nope.
Right. We don't want to scare her.
Right.
And you don't know.
I mean, it's still all speculation.
It is. And as parents,
nothing...
we don't have to divulge everything in the world to our kids. We protect them, you know, but we choose what we tell them all the time, because that's what you do.
What was the conversation between the two of you when she said this?
We didn't really.
Very first, we were like, oh my gosh, do we need to go, you know, get some mental health?
For real. Help. Like, is something going on here? She's 11 years old. Is there something starting that we need to be aware of? That's really, I thought more of that.
That's really interesting to hear, because I think most people would think, like, I think most of the listeners want to hear you say, oh, our minds immediately went to this Moore Murray thing, but your mind...
We didn't even know about it.
That's why I thought she was mentally going to have a mental illness, and it concerned me, because none of my kids have ever said that they've heard voices, although she was the kid that had the imaginary friends, you know? So, like, I was kind of like, oh, you're the only one of three who had these imaginary friends. So, to me, it was just something like, that's her, you know? But... Mm. After we found out, we did keep it a secret until the house was sold, and then she immediately started crying.
Oh, she hated us.
Just like you did.
She was so mad at us
for selling the house?
For not telling her.
Oh, for not telling her.
And
right,
she was angry, and she was like, I told you, and you didn't listen to me, and you didn't believe me, and it was this like big...
Meanwhile, we didn't believe her at first, but come January when we found out, we were like, wow, there's something
to this. I believe her
100%. Now we do. I mean, totally.
I still come back to this, and I'm maybe changing the subject a little bit, but I keep coming back to, like, how many other missing people could it be? I mean, I don't, like, obviously there are people gone missing, people have been murdered, you know, a lot of people. Maura Murray is the only one who's been rumored to have been killed in that house, as far as I've heard.
Mm. That's
as far
all
as I've heard.
Heard
also. And I've looked. I've dug into missing persons in that area, and...
Well, it's a very small, I mean, it's not like we're talking about New York City where people go missing all the time and you never find out where they are and no one has relatives, and that's not how it is up there. Everyone knows, you know, people, you know, there's not there's runaways and there's like everywhere, but it's not a huge city.
Right.
You know,
I want to just get back real quick to your daughter. Has she expressed any interest in revisiting the house currently?
No, not really.
No, and not because she's scared or anything. I mean, she really is a normal, I mean, she does sports, her grades are excellent. I mean, she's just like any other ninth grader, you know, so it's not something that we really discuss or bring up too much unless she, like, brings it to me or to Mike. But I think she just feels validated, so she feels okay right now.
Yeah. Right.
You know, like, she's fine with this because it doesn't really matter to her what happens or if they find a body. She doesn't really think about that.
I think she does. I mean, she feels really bad about it, and she would like closure, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, I think at least feeling validated made her feel better.
Oh, absolutely.
What about any other abnormalities in the house or on the property?
There's two things I think we should mention.
Two?
Well,
two?
Yeah. One is just, well, I thought interesting about the house that not particularly I mean, it is interesting that the copper was pulled out of the house and the downstairs definitely flooded.
I mean, I originally attributed that to I don't know,
people stealing copper,
probably someone stealing that needed right. the money, you know, the copper itself, although there wasn't very much because there's like a utility room right above it is
the all
upstairs
the plumbing.
Bathroom and the bathroom, and right next to it is the downstairs bathroom, so I mean, you're really only talking like 30 feet of pipe.
It didn't run through the whole house, like everywhere.
It's not what you would picture, like a, you know, regular two-story house with.
But there was no plumbing, and all the walls that were made from, what was that? What was the material?
It's a paneling.
Was warped on the bottom because the bottom had flooded out in the house.
What's interesting is when they took the copper, there's like a water main coming in that runs like underneath the slab and then comes out through the floor, and there's a shutoff valve there. They cut that off below the valve, so the water ran in
for
the
how
house
long we don't
for,
know.
I have no idea.
There was a turn, but they cut it.
It's a shutoff. The main shutoff.
Who would have cut that?
We don't.
Whoever
really
took
know.
I'm assuming whoever took the copper. Or who knows, maybe before that.
We don't
I have
know.
No idea, but the whole downstairs of the house
had been
completely
flooded
out.
When we bought it, it was not flooded. It was dry, but when we were painting the paneling, you
at
could see the water damage.
It had been.
At the bottom.
Okay, and so there was only one owner before you guys.
That's what we think.
As far as
it's definitely only one owner since it was built in 1970, I believe, house was built.
And then there was one occupant, obviously, at the time Maura went missing.
Correct.
Well, mm-hmm. His name was Claude. Mm-hmm. And then Claude moved out shortly after, and then the house sat empty for like...
To the best of my knowledge, no one has been there from...
That time.
From that time to when we bought it.
Okay, so officially from like 2004, 2005 till 2014, no one technically lived in the house,
mm-hmm.
although it was owned mm-hmm. by a man in Massachusetts.
Yes.
We have heard that it was a party house. Kids mm-hmm. used to go in there and party.
It looked like it when we bought
it. It looked like it. You know, there was graffiti.
Graffiti?
Yeah. Yeah, oddly enough, I mean, it was surprising because, you know, being from New York, you see graffiti if you drive through the city or something like that. But up in, you know, rural New Hampshire.
Yeah, who's tagging the A-frame house?
Yeah, well.
And then, like, that's an effort.
There was lots of, like, little carvings all over people's names. Like, we had our bedroom up in the loft area, the highest point, and you'd be laying in bed and just reading all the different names. I was originally going to sand it off, but I left it just because it was kind of curious.
So I think that's strange. I think that it's actually more than two things that were a little bit weird. The other was some missing paneling downstairs in the entryway when you came in.
Yes. There was probably a 5 foot by 3 foot, 4 foot.
Piece
not
of,
a full piece of paneling, but it was like cut out of the middle of the
wall. And the wall had no window or anything that they was replaced or anything like that. It was just
missing.
There
was no plumbing and no electric in that wall, so there'd be no reason to cut that out. Was a little weird.
And
I
also,
never really even thought of that until recently.
I just thought that was strange because the whole house seemed to be pretty authentic. Like the fixtures were original from the time period. Everything, nothing had really been fixed.
Like stepping back into the 70s.
It really was. And that paneling was missing in the front of the front entranceway. That was missing. And then the closet that we had been talking about today, there was another closet that abutted that, the room that our daughter would sleep in. That was missing paneling also. It was taken apart.
The whole back wall was taken out.
So the connective wall to the dark closet that
was
we're talking about.
Was missing paneling there as well.
Yeah. One other just thing that popped into my mind, from the video that we do have of that closet, there's a crucifix, and I think it says private on there. Is that something you guys put on
there? Well, the private sign was always on there, and I just left it, and then we put the crucifix
after we found out about
the cadaver dogs.
Actually,
and
your
stuff.
Mother gave it to
my
us.
My mother gave it to us.
We're not really religious.
My mom's pretty religious. I was raised Catholic, but I mean, I believe in something, but
we don't follow a religion.
I don't follow anything in particular, but I believe in the power of that sort of a thing. So that's why
we put
it
that
on there.
And then the carvings. In a trailer that we cut a couple of years ago, there's a shot of us looking at the window in the upstairs bedroom, and it says MM. That's carved right into the windowsill.
I remember you seeing that.
Yeah, and we've actually been asked about it a number of times over the years since that trailer's been out. Was there anything else like that that could be...
Oh, there was initials all over the place. And
anything about Mora? Anything say Mora or tagged MM elsewhere? Other random creepy things? No?
There's more things.
Yeah.
Yeah, kinds of names and inscriptions and just weird things. But
nothing that says, like, Claude is the killer or something like that?
No.
Okay.
So that was interesting. I think that we need to talk about the concrete slab.
And then there's a large, oddly placed concrete slab on the property.
What is this concrete slab?
All right, its size is probably, it looks like somebody was going to put like a mini garage or a supersized shed on it or something. It was probably like 12 by 10, something thereabouts.
Well, when you look at the house, it's on the left side of the house.
But its orientation is weird. You know, normally you would like line a structure up like parallel with your house or something to that effect.
I
mean, if I was building something, I would try to make it, you know,
square, like the house
pleasing.
Would be here, the garage would be like that.
So this was like kind of cocked on an angle, kind of haphazardly placed, very, very thick, very thick, actually.
It's like a diamond shape, as opposed to like if I was going to do it, I would do it like this with the house
like a
there.
Square.
Yeah.
To
square
like
it
square
off.
Up to the street.
But this was more like this, and it was very overgrown.
And over to right there, it was like all kinds of boulders and stuff.
Not, like little
not
rocks.
Huge boulders, but yeah, you know, big enough that you can't move by hand. And it was just like poured on top of like a bunch of stuff.
And it was big.
And oddly enough, what Sarah was talking about before was carpet being on the property.
It was over
on the
here.
Edge, the carpet was on the
and it was over
on
here
the property
too.
Line.
Yeah,
and,
but it was all
and
around.
It looked
here.
Like a pile of dirt actually, because yeah. There was so much stuff growing up through it. But
there was carpet. On the concrete slab.
It was like rolled up and tossed.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, like garbage.
Oh, like a bunch of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Because my first impression when we heard about this was that it was
like carpeted.
Yeah.
No, it had a lot of moss.
Had a lot of moss.
The slab was mossy. And I remember this is before knowing anything. I went, this is really strange, but maybe it could be like a patio. You know, like I'd put some chairs on it and a table on it. It was big enough that you would sit outside and not be in the grass if you didn't want to be in the grass.
Meanwhile, you'd have to climb over like rocks and stuff to get to it.
And when you said that it was thick,
like it was, it's we tried
thick.
To. See.
It was coming up above the, so it wasn't like
it wasn't flush
with the ground.
No.
It was raised.
Yes,
by like a foot or so.
It's probably like
it was deep though. I mean, it was a deep.
I mean, some areas are probably like 5-6 inches thick. I don't know. I didn't like really investigate how thick the concrete slab
right,
was.
Why would you?
But it was just very strange.
It's a peculiar thing.
But once I found out about the cadaver dogs and the story, I did. Who was it?
You spoke with someone in the.
No, you know what it was? It was the real estate agent said she was in concrete or something, that maybe a psychic or something said that one time or something. And he's like, you got to find out who was pouring concrete in Mountain Lakes at that time. And that's where you might find her.
Okay, so this is one of the things that was strange, or that's very strange.
That's very strange.
So what I did was I was like, you know what?
Well, here we go.
Let me do some more research.
Okay.
I call it Mountain Lakes, the building department, and I find out if there was ever a permit for a concrete slab on the property. And they have no record of it whatsoever. Now, just so everybody knows, in Mountain Lakes, you need a permit to do anything and everything. Like, if you pour a concrete slab on there, they're going to find out and tax you.
They want to know.
Yep. And also, when you're pouring concrete, you have to you have to dig, right? Because I'm assuming that it's...
Well, not necessarily.
No.
You
could just go into
the
ground.
Level, usually you level out of space.
Usually you level out, you know, whatever. But you could just pour concrete right on top of the ground.
Or, okay.
But you should.
But this had a form to it. This was definitely a form.
It was definitely formed.
It was dug a little bit, probably.
Possibly. But it was formed because it had a sharp edge, the edge around it.
You could tell it had a form on
it. It had like the
wood.
You know, it would have had wood and it would have been poured into it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Do you know if this slab was there originally? With the house, when the house was built?
There's no record of it, and it wasn't there when it was originally built, no.
So you did some research, you looked into, in the Lakes region, any excavation, any sort of construction, any permits?
They told
me
there's no concrete slab there. And I said...
According to our house records that Mountain Lakes had on file.
Oh, then that means that it wasn't there with the original house.
No,
it was not there.
It was not.
They said, you do not have a concrete slab on your property. I said, actually, I do. They're like, well, you're not supposed to. And I said, well, I'm telling
it's
you,
there.
It was there when we bought it.
So let's just do the math on this. It was one owner before you guys.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't there. It was placed there sometime between the original owner. Obviously didn't have the concrete slab. Someone poured it against
regulations. Well, the original
regulations.
The original owner owned it until we bought
it's
it.
It's only been three owners of this house
He rented it to
Have you spoken to the original owner about that?
Oh, no.
No.
He's an older gentleman.
Oh, okay.
I
no.
think he's in his mid-80s or something.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But it was strange because it didn't really make any sense and there was nothing built on top of it and it didn't really serve a purpose. Like
when we had visited your house, when you invited us in, there was a bunch of snow on the ground. It was February, so we didn't actually get to see the concrete slab, right? That was covered.
Correct.
I don't even know if we talked to you about the concrete slab that day.
I think we wanted to talk about it, but we didn't get to it.
Yeah, I don't think we got to it.
We were a little
it.
Too wrapped up
it,
with
it
the bones.
There was a lot going on. But John...
Yeah, the bones we found in the upstairs fireplace.
Right, the bones that probably...
There's definitely more in there, too.
I'm sure.
There's definitely more in there.
Definitely more boat.
There's absolutely all kinds of that. In the fireplace. Whole base of that fireplace
it's full of debris.
Is hollow.
So stuff.
And there was, when we had to rebuild the hearth of the fireplace, at one point there was a chimney fire in the house, and it destroyed the upper half of the chimney, but also somebody had put a wood stove in the first floor without an actual like chimney on
a liner, they popped a hole. Basically, they popped a hole in the floor of the fireplace and ran.
Let the smoke just go up.
To go up.
From the first floor all the way up.
So I'm thinking maybe that might have caused the fire.
The creosote buildup was unbelievable.
I want to be clear about what you just said. From the downstairs fireplace.
Well, there's no fireplace downstairs.
It's just a white base.
Okay.
A block base for the fireplace upstairs on the second floor.
And there was no official or formal or...
There was no chimney.
No.
It was a support system for the upstairs fireplace.
Chimney in the house. It was central.
And they punched a hole in it.
Because it was a round hole
put
there.
A wood stove pipe through it and let the smoke just ride up this support system. And the creosote in there was unbelievable.
Yeah. So there's a lot of stuff in that base. It's made out of cinder blocks, not out of brick, the base. There's stuff in there because that's where we were cleaning it out. There was a side entry door.
Yeah, it was like a clean out thing.
Everything about this house is like a weird like oxymoron. You have someone who went through so much effort to caulk underneath the stairs in this closet. You have someone who went through so much effort to put a diamond shaped concrete slab awkwardly placed like that. That
doesn't make
effort.
Any sense.
That takes effort. Yeah. But there's no direct path for the smoke to travel out of the house. All like that's haphazard. Mm. There's weird like
garbage everywhere.
Garbage and carved like sections of walls taken out. It's like someone goes through the effort to put this concrete slab there, and you said that there's edge to it. There's like an
edging. There's definitely
to it.
Like
yeah, it was definitely formed.
It was
out.
Formed. It wasn't like they just dumped concrete and it went. You know,
well, that's
it
what.
Was,
that's what I would expect someone who doesn't bother to put a formal chimney in to do. If you can't do that, what are you doing with a concrete slab? That's just my perception of it being this whole house is an oxymoron. So the bones.
It's definitely a strange
the
place.
Bones.
Now, the bones we had tested by a forensic anthropologist, or at least looked at. And that forensic anthropologist was pretty sure they were animal bones.
I would think so.
I think so.
I mean, you know, when you like see something or touch something and you just have this weird feeling, you know, like something's not right. And that, I mean, just.
It was very strange.
It's strange.
I mean, we don't
definitely.
Burn our garbage in our, we have a wood burning stove in our home.
And you don't
and
burn?
I don't
your,
burn bones.
Your baby back ribs?
No. I don't burn garbage, you know, so it was a little bit weird. Like it wasn't an outside fire pit or like an outside fire barrel. It was an inside thing,
well, they did have a fire pit outside.
That
right?
was ours.
That was
our,
we built
that.
Built that.
Oh, that that answers a lot of questions for me because I always keep coming back to why are you burning? Actually, that answers a lot of questions for me because I kept saying why are you burning stuff inside if you're burning? Obviously, you're burning an animal.
Yeah,
it's animal bones. Why are you burning that inside? If you had a fire pit. So that was your fire pit.
Yeah, we built
that.
Yeah,
my son and
that.
I carried all those rocks from different parts of the yard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Just hanging out there.
Well, that answers some questions. Yeah. If you're burning your animal for whatever reason, if you want to burn it and you don't have an outdoor fire pit, throw it in your
wood burning stove.
And it's still there.
Throw it in your wood burning stove.
Fire pit's still there. Yeah, I was so happy to see it still there.
That's nice. Yeah.
And actually, there was a second doctor who looked at the bones and also said it was animal. Mm-hmm. And you had someone look at it too?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. And they were pretty convinced of the same thing?
Yes.
Okay. So that's three people. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty convinced those are animal bones, but it doesn't mean there isn't something else mixed up in there. In those bones, like, you know, if you're going to dispose of human bones, maybe you throw some animal ones on top, too. But I don't want to start hysteria or anything
it's
like that.
It's just something that was very strange. It's just one of those other strange things about the house.
Tim,
you know?
Tim, stop starting hysteria.
Yeah.
It's really really irrational of you to think that someone would have mixed up animal bones with human bones in a house that cadaver dogs went bonkers in. You know, it's a reach. Is
I'm hysterical.
You are hysterical about this. Stop drawing your own conclusions. the anthropologist that looked at the bones when we took them over there pointed out that there was like a fine tooth hacksaw. It looked like a fine tooth hacksaw had sawed
most likely
the bones.
A butcher.
Yeah. Mm. So there you are. You have your
That's what the bones are.
Yep.
Yep. You have your the deer that you shot or your you know, whatever that, and you cut off, you know, all the usable pieces of meat, you freeze those, and then you start sawing up the bones and you throw them in your wood burning fire pit. I mean, fireplace.
Yeah. Yeah. Which could have been when no one was there. It could have been during the vacant period.
Yes.
It was empty for 10 years. I mean, there was rumor that people butchered deer there. But that would, I believe, was in the back room.
There was like a utility room in the back of the house.
There was a utility room. There was a chain hanging from the ceiling in the utility room.
Jesus Christ. Did you guys...
We bought the house.
Yeah. Yeah. Had you not seen Texas Chainsaw Massacre? Yeah.
Was no, we really loved it. Like, I really loved that house.
It was
just
really weird.
It
was like something was calling us to have it.
I'm glad I don't own it right now, but I love that
house. I still want it.
I know you do, but...
Did you happen to lumen all that back room?
No.
Or the,
no.
Okay.
We really weren't crazy with
that. I wish
that.
I'd bought like a couple of gallons of it, but.
It was just a little bit. I mean, for that one closet.
It was enough to do what we intended.
I know
to
some
do.
People will listen to it and say, well, that makes sense. The blood in the closet was must have been deer blood.
Yeah, that's what they're going to say. You know what? Very likely. But doesn't explain the cadaver dogs, people.
Always come back to the cadaver
or
dogs.
Or the positive human DNA.
Or now
that
positive
blood that was
human
found in that
DNA.
Closet.
And I'm sorry, Art, it's not a worker. I was a construction worker for a long time. like I think Lance said one time, I mean, you had to go in there and slice your jugular.
It's just that part doesn't make any sense.
There's many scenarios, right?
Yeah.
You're sawing up you're using the house as like your base camp. You go out with some hunting buddies and
I was just thinking that hunters potentially.
Yeah. And then they go into this house and then they strip the deer and, oh, I cut myself. And then, you know, someone else cuts themselves on another date and it all gets mixed in with everything. But again, like
that doesn't explain the cadaver dogs.
Right.
In the same area that
yes.
Blood was.
Right. So there's stuff that has gone on.
They
in that
only
house.
Hit on human beings.
Oh, but just something I wanted to mention was that we had talked to John about the dogs and the slab.
Yes.
And he didn't recall ever investigating that area, correct?
With the dogs, he doesn't
know
if
that.
They went through the property.
I asked
or not. Because he was actually there.
With some
that
dogs.
In 2006.
You're talking about Smith or Healy?
Yeah, John Smith.
Okay.
And he said that he didn't recall the dogs walking over that area at
to
all.
To the slab.
Because I'd asked that. I said, well, you had the dogs here. Do we know if the property was investigated besides the closet? Was the slab investigated? And he did not. He's the only person that we had to ask that question to.
But oddly enough, on a side note, there was a young woman that died in one of the brooks right across the street. Those cadaver dogs that hit on our house hit on the spot in the creek where she was found.
And that was like in the 80s, right?
Yes.
So that was like 20 years.
20 years
by.
Later in a creek bed that has water running through it, those dogs hit on that spot.
So would they, you know, just hypothetically, I don't know much about dogs, but if there was a body inside that concrete slab, would the dogs be able to smell that?
I'm not sure. It's my understanding. Well,
quite possibly. If not, ground penetrating radar certainly would be able to look at that.
The cadaver dogs, you just said back in 2006, hit on that creek that Pamela Webb's body was found.
Yes.
And we're talking...
I was told by... That's what John Healy told me.
That's what John Healy told you.
Yes.
And we're saying this like, oh, the cadaver dogs even had caught the scent of somebody that had been there for 20 years.
Yes.
Unless there's a body 20 years ago.
From that day.
From that day. Unless there's a body there now somewhere in that area.
Hmm. Yeah, could have been.
Yeah.
Doesn't necessarily have to be her, but that was the area that they found her, that Pamela Webb.
One of the creepiest things that you told us when we were in the house was how you thought that you heard walking on the roof.
That's what at nighttime you would hear.
Oh yeah,
walking
the noises. I
thought it was expansion. And
I don't scare easily. I try to dismiss it as expansion and contraction, but there's noises like nonstop.
That's why I didn't want to get up.
The place is creepy.
At night.
At night, it was really creepy.
When you told us this, we were standing, we were upstairs, and you said, I swear I hear people walking on the roof. And I remember looking up, and that was the creepiest part to me because there's footprints on the on your ceiling.
I know.
Yeah, there is. There's tar. Like,
I don't get it.
Tarred footprints.
Yeah.
And it was just like, had to have been just sloppy construction.
Right.
Like,
they're walking
the workers,
on the boards.
Yeah. They're walking on the boards, but and then they threw them up anyway. And no one said anything.
At that moment, it was probably like top 10 of the most like horrific visuals that I ever
sure.
had in my life.
Sure. I could see that.
Like, walking upside down.
Yes.
And you look at it like, how the heck? And then you realize, oh, you know what? Back in the 70s, somebody had some tar or something on their boots and they're walking around, and that's when they got up there.
But someone else, I mean, our daughter had heard it also, some sound that sounded like foot stomping, because we had sent her back to the house to get gloves from ice skating or something like that.
Yeah, she went back
and
to get something.
She thought that her brother was messing with her. She went up to the kitchen and she thought she heard someone come up the stairs, and there was no one there, but she thought it was her sister, her brother, who were too lazy to go get the gloves. So, you know, she's not really lazy, and
it scared her.
But it scared her, and that was another just little things that she would say, but again, we didn't make sure we didn't tell her anything, because we didn't want them not to want to go with us to go up there. We wanted it to be a family house.
Yes.
Did she come out of the house after that?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. She went running out.
Yeah. She was, running down the street. And I said, oh, no. It's just, again, you know what? That's how.
It's the house settling.
It's the house. It just makes noise.
It's just creepy.
Like the worst parents in history.
But, I mean, that's a tough thing to tell your child.
Yeah.
Like,
how the heck do you navigate that?
Right.
How would you navigate it better today? Like,
we wouldn't have.
Yeah, exactly.
I
how
would
you
protect them,
right?
And not tell them,
because it was supposed to be this happy family place where you
we
get away
friends
from
up,
the
you
technology
know?
And all that. You actually,
Wi-Fi.
Yeah, there was nothing. You went there and you spent family time.
The
you did
would
fun
detox
things
from their gadgets and play board games.
Right,
you know?
Right.
It was
you
bad
go
for
sledding
like 48 hours.
And hiking and swimming and fishing and stuff.
And you both are super grounded. Ever since we've met, you both, your occupations are not something where you can, either of you can, you have to be pretty mentally stable to have the occupations that you both have.
Well, the mentally stable ones make the best ones. I'm sure there are people that are not.
Right.
But
right.
Yes,
right.
We have to think logically, and that's our jobs, is to be, you know,
as logical
if this,
as
then
possible,
that, what does this look like? I'm looking at you, and what, you know, that's our job.
Right.
Our careers are there, you know, that's what we do.
And I'm sure some people are thinking, oh, you heard, you know, footsteps on the roof. That's probably squirrels or something. But as logical people, or the house settling, and you said it makes a lot of noises, when does it stop as logical people where you're like, no, I know the sound of someone walking upstairs and a house settling, and they're completely different.
Right. That's why it kind of makes our brains a little bit fried, because we don't think. That's, you know, like talking about our child's experience or the way we felt at night makes me uneasy, because, again, like, that's not how I normally go out throughout my day. I'm not visiting psychics every week. You know, I'm not doing those things. So,
Or ever.
So I don't want to sound,
luminol.
You know, that's not something that we normally do. So it's uncomfortable, because I don't want anyone to think that I'm not, like, logical or, you know, grounded or any, you know, that's just not.
No,
because
it all comes back to the cadaver dogs.
If you could have a piece of advice for the current owners or the current occupants of the house, what would it be?
If anybody asks you to go in there and to gather any evidence, please let them. Please.
When you say anybody, you mean law enforcement?
Law enforcement, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Please let them.
Not
without
a warrant.
And people out there, please respect them. We had people we thought it was just because they were friendly. We had people just stopping in front of the house and gawking at us constantly.
We didn't know.
We were so naive. We had no clue. And then once we found out everything, we were like,
that's why.
Everyone in this neighborhood is so friendly.
Freak show. And it wasn't people from the neighborhood. You know?
Right. But
people from all over the place. Yeah.
The impression that you guys must have had, I mean,
we're like, they're so nice.
Yeah.
They actually are. The people
they
are
really
wonderfully
nice. We met some really nice people.
Well, thank you guys for joining us today and telling
thank
this
you.
Story. I think it's really important. And I think it could connect some dots. We'll see what happens in the next few months.
Yeah, it also gives like a voice to the story that is, you know, rapidly turning into, like you said, dark tourism. And it's good to hear a voice, and it's good to have a voice like kind of permanently on record. And it's like, oh, the A-Frame, the owners of the A-Frame. And you can, you know, hear it right from you guys.